Okay. I don't know what I was thinking, but I always thought that MeUndies was that really cool underwear brand with the fun, crazy prints. But it wasn't until I actually tried on a pair that I realized, oh my God, these things are amazing. They're so comfortable. Once I put them on, I'm like, I don't want to take these things off. It's because they use a micro modal fabric, which is 3 times softer than regular cotton. For me, it's like I have a real problem because I don't want to change my underwear anymore. And MeUndies is so committed, and this isn't BS, they are so committed to making you comfortable in a pair of their MeUndies that they are 100% satisfaction guarantee. You're going to love these undies, but if for whatever reason you don't, just send them back and they will give you a full refund. You know why? Because they're in the comfort business. And MeUndies has just launched a brand new membership. You can level up your top drawer with new undies each month. Members gain access to exclusive prints that no one else can get. They get special member pricing on every product MeUndies makes. And you can switch styles or skip any month you want. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase any MeUndies, you get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer. Get 15% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever put on. To get your 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/ImprovNerd. That's MeUndies.com/ImprovNerd. If you're an experienced improviser, if you're a seasoned improviser, I just wanted to let you know that I will be teaching my Artist Low Comedy Level 3 Advanced Ensemble starting September 5th at Green Shirt Studios here in Chicago. Now, this class is divided into 2 parts. The first part is we give you long-form tools, like how to use a suggestion that doesn't bog you down and get in your way, how to make edits using your natural instincts, and how to do walk-ons that aren't hijacking the scenes but actually support your scene partners. The second part of this class is we come up with a form that plays to the strength of the ensemble, and then we rehearse it, and the last night of class we put on a long form performance that goes anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes in front of our family and friends. So you get real stage experience in front of a real audience, and you get real direct feedback from an experienced teacher and director like myself. If you're interested and you need more information, just go to my website at jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com, and that's called Artist Low Comedy Level 3 Advanced Ensemble.
I'm Sophie Schrand, and you're listening to Improv Nerd with Jimmy Corain.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Oh,
Hey, everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another great episode of Improv Nerd. Our guest today is Sophie Schrand. She is the host and creator of Science with Sophie, a science comedy show for girls and everyone. She's also an accomplished improviser here in Chicago. We talked to her about what it was like when she moved from Boston to Chicago and how she got through the lonely times when she first started out taking improv classes. Also, why it's so important for her to create a role model for girls in science. And she gives us some wonderful tips about how to do musical improv. But before we get to the interview with Sophie, I just want to say last weekend, Lauren and I got into a fight. We don't usually get into a fight where we yell at each other. And when we do, like we did last Saturday, it was very quick. You know, it was like, I'm mad about this and you're mad about that. And that's it, because we don't really express anger that much in our house because I have a hard time with it. I can only speak for myself. But when that happens, and I felt really angry and I felt really hurt about our argument, what I do, which is not healthy, and I'm not recommending anyone to do this, is I usually push my feelings down and then withdraw from the person, give them the silent treatment, not wanting to be around them, is what I did to Lauren for about 24 hours. And then when finally, I settled down, because she doesn't seem to, anger seems to go through her really quickly, but for me, like, I hold on to it. We talked it out, and it was very humbling for me, because I'm realizing that I may talk a lot about feelings and stuff, but I still have a very hard time expressing anger and telling someone, I felt angry or I felt hurt at what you said in that argument. So there it is. Well, enough about me. Let's get to this interview with Sophie. And I also love what she talks about in this interview about the power of creating your own projects. Here it is, the Sophie Schrand episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Sophie Schrand, thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
It is my pleasure, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
You grew up the oldest of four kids in Marshfield, Massachusetts, which is a beach town outside of Boston. Your mom was a photographer, and your dad was an actor turned doctor. How were your parents supportive of your acting and performing when you were younger?
I was very lucky to have incredibly supportive parents because they're both creative types and really inquisitive types. They just encouraged me to keep doing that, and they really supported whatever I showed an interest in.
Did they like, oh, go ahead and we're going to take you to auditions, or we're going to build stages? Or
yeah, my mom built my first stage when I was 3 years old. I played the Little Mermaid by myself on a mattress.
You played Ariel?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
I got to cast the show.
Right,
you know?
Right.
She made me this stage, and she made a whole backstage area for me all in our basement. They were just really nurturing.
And your dad had been on a television show that I watched as a kid on PBS called Zoom, and he was Joe on Zoom. What kind of advice did he give you in terms of acting?
My dad was kind of my acting coach for my whole childhood. So he had the kind of natural ability, because Zoom is all about like kids who are just being kids. So he had kind of that natural sense of acting.
When you say he was your acting coach, did he go over lines with you? Did he give you direction on auditions?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would give me a lot of directions. I remember car rides where we'd be preparing for an audition and he'd be giving me notes and I'd be like, you know, talking about it, maybe arguing back a little bit. But it was just such a safe relationship that we could like really grow characters together.
Did you ever get mad at him?
Yeah, when I got a little older, I think that's when I was like, okay, I got this, you know, come on. But we still talk about that stuff. And there was one instance when I was in fifth grade and I played the part of Mary in A Secret Garden, which is one of my favorite shows. And he and I planned this thing that looking back, I was like, that might not be a nice thing to do to a director. But we planned like a surprise where we had rehearsed it one way and then had like an instant moment of like, oh no, we should do this instead. And I did it, I think it was opening night. And it went really well, but I think looking back, I wouldn't do that to a director again.
Did the director say anything after the performance?
They actually loved it. I got lucky. They loved it. Yeah, they really went with it.
So you're doing theater in grade school, you're doing theater in high school, and when a time comes to go to college, you don't pick a school with an acting conservatory program. Why not?
I decided I wanted to do science as my main focus. At the time, that's what I decided. So I wanted a university that had lots of options. And then I got there and I did that, and I was kind of empty inside because I didn't have all of me there. So I decided to add the theater degree back in.
And so you were a neuroscience major. How did you get interested in science as a kid?
I was really curious as a kid, and my dad, being a doctor, would share that information with me and that knowledge. And we used to play a game when I was little called differential diagnosis.
How is it played?
I thought everyone played this game. So we say, like, patient presents with XYZ symptoms, and then you got to figure out what's going on.
Stuffy nose, scratchy throat, ringing in the ear. What is it?
Exactly. It's probably stress. Just kidding.
I totally think everything can be stress. Everything
right?
can be stress.
Everything can. Yeah, seriously.
But so that's the game that you guys would play.
Yeah.
And that got you interested in science.
Yeah, that kind of questioning and like putting together the pieces of a puzzle. And then when I was in, even with that, though, when I was in middle school, I thought I wasn't good at math. So that really turned me off. And I almost didn't go into science at all. And then I had a 10th grade chemistry teacher who, named Ms. Norton, who was like my real life Ms. Frizzle, who got me.
Tell me about Ms. Frizzle, because I'm a little older.
Ms. Frizzle from the Magic School Bus. It is a cartoon. I think it was PBS.
It's also a series of books, isn't it?
Yes, they made books. They've now redone the series, too, with Kate McKinnon as Ms. Frizzle. that, or her daughter, I think, or her niece, something. But it's about finding science, like, in really surprising places. And there's a school bus that goes in all these weird, surprising spots. It's a cartoon. It's lovely. But she's not a real person. So my Ms. Frizzle was Ms. Norton, who was a real human being.
And she got you interested in science.
Yeah, she was wacky and wild and energetic. And we'd walk into that lab in chemistry and we would have no idea what to expect. Like, things would light on fire, things would explode. And she would just be like, okay, everyone okay? Everyone safe? Great, here we go.
Which is interesting because I was not good in math and science. And it seems like there's always a pattern. People are either good at English and history or not good in math and science. You're one or the other. But you're kind of the exception where you were good in the arts and you were also good in science.
I say that a lot to kids, that I think we are kind of put in buckets really early in life where it's like, oh, you show an aptitude for this, or you like this and so you can't like anything else. And I think that's a missed opportunity for a lot of us. So I have always been like, I'm going to do all the things and I'm going to do them well and I'm going to enjoy them and I'm going to put them together.
Then after college, you get a Groupon, and you start taking improv classes at the improv. What's so funny that you got a Groupon?
Because a lot of my, like, pivotal life moments have been because I got a Groupon.
Okay, so we'll talk about this. So tell me about we'll get back to this, but what other pivotal moments revolved around getting a Groupon?
I got a Groupon for a vacation once with the man who's now my husband. Right after we got engaged, I really researched the heck out of this Groupon, and we went to Treehouse Villages in the Dominican Republic, and I wanted to be Jane Goodall, like, when I was little, so this was perfect for me.
Jane Goodall, for the people that don't know.
Jane Goodall, chimpanzee researcher who is a naturalist and an incredible scientist. Google her. She's wonderful. So I was ready to be a naturalist and be out in the jungle, like, living this life. And it was terrifying. And I didn't sleep for a week. And I ended up going a little bit crazy, which is called sleep-deprived acute psychosis. And
I could give you three symptoms.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah. It was me, and me.
Right. Dry mouth, mm-hmm, headaches, mm-hmm, and restless sleeping.
Yes, and being convinced that you were going to be killed in the jungle. It was wild.
Did you have that? You were,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You guys are in a treehouse,
mm-hmm,
and you're on vacation on a Groupon. And so what do you learn from, you think you're going to be killed. What do you learn from this experience?
I learned that next vacation I need just, like, walls. Maybe a roof. Things that I didn't think were important to me that I now realize are very important for restful sleep.
So let's go back to the first Groupon you get. And you're in Boston, and you get a Groupon to start taking improv classes at the Improv Asylum in Cambridge. And you're with your boyfriend at the time. What made you decide to try improv?
I had been an actor for a long time at that point, and I had a few friends who had done improv, and I would see them in college and think, that looks like such a cool skill that really terrifies me. And so having this Groupon, I thought, let's add this skill to the mix. And then I convinced my boyfriend at the time to do it too, because I thought, this will be good for you in terms of, like, public speaking. So let's just try it. And I was hooked.
And what I find interesting is, you said you fell in love with improv. What did you get from improv that you didn't get from acting? What did it give you?
The ability to be totally in the moment and really absorb information and take it and go with it in a way that you have no idea what's about to happen was really magic to me. In theater, I'm in the moment, absolutely, but you know what's coming next, right? Because you have lines that you've learned. And the ability to just create in this, like, total blank canvas with other people at the same time was like an internal just flame that was sparked.
And so you eventually go through the program and you're putting up a performance. And Kylie Fitzgerald, who was on the main stage at the time at Improv Asylum, since then she's moved to Chicago. She does shows at Second City and I.O. and The Annoyance. She pulls you over after one of the shows and she gives you a piece of advice.
Yeah, and I didn't know her at all. And this was my very first time performing improv in front of anybody. So it was really quite scary for me. And she came up to me and she said, if you want to do this for the next 15 years of your life, you need to move to Chicago.
And what did you take with that? What did you do with that advice?
I moved to Chicago. which was kind of wild. I really didn't expect to just up and go.
Because you describe yourself as someone who researched, you know, if you have to buy a spatula, you're on the internet for a couple hours.
Oh, yes. I research a haircut for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And this was just the right set of circumstances. The timing was good. She actually came back to me later in the night again and said, I really meant it. You need to go to Chicago. So that really, it's like stuck in my head. And I decided if I'm going to take the risk, it's going to be now.
So then you decide you're going to come here and study at Second City and take an intensive, right?
Yep.
And then what made you decide in the intensive, like, this is it, I'm coming here?
The like aura of Second City. You walk in there and there's this big escalator and there are all these pictures of people and everybody's milling around and everyone wants to be Tina Fey or Amy Poehler, right? And like, oh my gosh, there's this sense that it could really happen. And there's a lot of work to do and there's a lot of competition. But competition in improv is really different from competition in theater.
Explain that to me.
Because the nature of improv is so collaborative, in an audition, it's a weird experience because you rely on each other, right? You're competing, and at the same time, you need each other on stage. So there's a very interesting relationship there. And improv I found to just be so, so kind by nature, that I found it really different from a world where I had grown up in musical theater auditions, which also have a wonderful place in my heart. But it's definitely much of like a each person out for themselves kind of situation.
So you get to Chicago and you describe those early months as feeling totally alone and being brutally depressed. How did crafting get you through this?
Yeah, it was a really... I guess I shouldn't say surprised because I knew I was taking a risk. But I moved out in that polar vortex winter mm-hmm. where we literally couldn't go outside for days at a time. I didn't have a job. I was really feeling like, what have I done? And I fell into crafting as my solution because it was tangible. I could go from point A to point B and feel really accomplished.
And so what kind of stuff did you make to make yourself feel better?
I made lots of cards. Valentine's Day, everyone got these beautiful, like, hand-embossed cards. I learned how to emboss. I taught myself how to do, like, stamping and painting, and I painted horses onto shoes that I sent to my mom, and I made a shelf, and I made English muffins from scratch. I made some beautiful artwork for people, things I just don't have time to do anymore, so I look back on it kind of fondly.
So I would imagine you would pick the phone up a couple times and you'd call your parents and say, I don't know if I made the right decision or not. How did they help you?
My family has always said to all of us, you can always try something and go somewhere because if it doesn't work out, you can always come home. And just knowing that and having that support, what a privilege I had to know that I had this support system and this net underneath me, even if they're 1,000 miles away, that they're there. And so knowing that alone was enough to keep going. I kind of think of it like if I have a Tylenol in my pocket, I may not have to take the Tylenol. Just knowing that it's there makes me feel a little bit better.
I feel sometimes like when I have an ailment and I'm like, I'm not going to call the doctor. And I call the doctor. And as soon as I call the doctor and set an appointment up, my back feels better.
Right. Right. You just brought attention to it, and that's all you needed.
And when you come to Chicago and you study at Second City, one of your goals is the main stage, right?
At the time, yeah. Yep. I think I remember telling Rachel Mason that, like, in level two. I was like, I'm going to be on the main stage. That's my goal. I want you to know that's my goal. And you're like, okay.
And so what happened to that goal?
It shifted. It really did. Because I had this idea for Science with Sophie, which is a science comedy show for girls and everyone, like Bill Nye, but a lady, like Ms. Frizzle, but a real person. And I had this idea a long time ago, and moving to Chicago, gaining the skill set of the comedy, meeting people who I felt were the right choices to help me make it, shifted my goal because I realized I need to do this. I need to do this one thing that I am uniquely positioned to do.
And let's talk a little about that show. And tell me, so the idea was always in the back of your mind?
It had been for many years. The beginning of the idea, I think, really stemmed when I worked at the Museum of Science in Boston, and I was asked to give a presentation about a woman in science who inspired me. And the only person I could think of was Ms. Frizzle. So I gave a 20-minute talk. I was standing next to like the president of Harvard at this big event, and I gave a 20-minute talk about Ms. Frizzle, and my boss was really mad because Ms. Frizzle is not a real person.
She's a fictitious character.
Right. So my boss like pulled me aside and she was disgruntled with me. And then I realized I was also mad, but for a different reason.
What were you mad about?
I was mad because I realized, oh my gosh, I don't have a real life female role model in science. That is ridiculous.
Why don't you think there's more female role models in science?
The thing is, they're out there. There are many women in science. We are not equally represented. So less than 30% of STEM careers are held by women, and we're 50% of the population. But they're not represented in the media. You know, we have Bill Nye, Carl Sagan, Neil deGrasse Tyson. We have all these wonderful science role models, and they're all men. We just haven't put a woman up there on a platform.
And so you have being angry, you turn that into this idea.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm going to create 8 episodes of you being the host of the show and doing a science show for kids, specifically for girls, but for anybody really, in the 7 to 14 age range.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are really serious about this in terms of you do crowdfunding, you go out and you get a great production company to produce this. You bring in some friends that you've worked with to write and stuff like that. And for people that are listening to this and they're thinking, well, you know, I'd like to do my own movie, or I'd like to have my own improv theater, or even produce a show, you know, a live improv show. What advice would you give them?
Just start. I know that sounds crazy, like, oh my gosh, it's such a big idea. It doesn't have to start huge. There is an engineering principle of prototyping. In business, it's called minimum viable product. It's basically make a small idea or a pilot of what you want to try and see if people like it. Get feedback. Listen to that feedback. That's so important, to change things as you go and not be too precious about anything.
Now, this almost sounds like the researcher in you.
It is. It really does apply to my little science heart.
So in that scenario you just gave us, so put up your show, invite 15 of your friends, and then ask them for their feedback. How does that help with the project?
Yeah, it gives you a warm audience to start with. So definitely start with people who...
So it helped with your confidence, right?
Yeah. You want to start with your friendly critics, right? People who will be honest with you, who are already on your side. Before you go convince the rest of the world that this thing is a good idea, get the people who you know will help you out. So I say in a venture, like, have your one person who you know will help you do this. Whatever crazy stuff comes, whatever challenges end up happening, you have one person who's going to stick by your side.
And that person could be?
Could be a family member, could be a friend, could be a business partner. For me, it's my husband, who is also an executive producer on the show. And that's part of why I married him, because he really gets it. And I know that no matter what, he's going to be with me to help with whatever challenges I face.
And the other thing I find, I have so much respect for you, is the money that you've raised twice for this. I think it's over $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many crowdfunding things that I get or I see on Facebook. I'm starting an improv theater, or I'm writing an improv book, or whatever that is. What is the secret in crowdfunding for you guys?
Crowdfunding is a double-edged sword, because there is so much out there, right? And especially right now, where there are so many different causes, it can be hard to stand out. But you're asking your community for help. So if your community, this is actually another way that you can kind of test what you've got. If your community says, no thanks, then maybe you need to listen to it, as painful as it might be. But we have found that our community has said, yeah, we really want this. We really need this. This is something that we're kind of yearning for and we want more of. So it's not just a way to get funding, but it's also a way to have a relationship with a community of people who you're going to bring this to.
The other thing is when you started to study improv here in Chicago, there was a game that you really like, and it's called Five Things. And I always love sharing games on this podcast because this goes all over the world, and not everyone can get to a major city or have a teacher who's in town. So tell me a little about this game and why you like it so much.
I love this game because it really gives you the opportunity to think on your feet, be goofy, be silly, let your mind just flow and see where it takes you. And I think it's a good game for people who are professional improvisers and people who don't ever want to do improv but want just the skill of being able to think on your feet. So I've seen people do this who are at Second City. I've seen people do it who are like lawyers and who are there for workshops. And I think everyone benefits from it. So I love this game.
So describe the game.
The game is often played in a circle, but sometimes I'll just play it by myself, where you give yourself a category, like Jimmy, five. This is more, you start simple, you can also go advanced. So like, Jimmy, five colors you've never heard of. And then you would just list off five things. And every time you say one, I go, yes. Or I could say one and count off two, three, four,
so
five.
So I'm making up the colors?
Yep. You can make up whatever you want. And whatever you say is the right answer.
Okay, great. Chocolate velvet.
Yes.
Burnt.
Yes.
Simony.
Yes.
Grainy.
Yes.
And Natska.
Yes. Five colors. Oh, my gosh. Five things.
Okay, now, I've also seen a play where it's in a circle. You're turning to the person, right? If you're doing it in a circle, and you ask them for real things. You ask them, five brands of beer.
Right. Schlitz.
Yay.
Blatz.
Two.
Bomba.
Three.
Bud Light.
Four.
Blue Moon.
Five.
And Coors.
Six.
Oh, yeah. I just kept going.
Right. That's five things. And what is that? How does that help in improv?
It helps because you just let your body kind of take over. So the goal of the game is not to get accurate things. It's not even to get accurate words. I think I might have made up a word in that last one. And you made up a lot of words in yours. The point is to have a rhythm and have it go fast. So I think that's just a really freeing way to like get out of your own head and shake it up.
You also here in Chicago got into a show. You were cast on a show at Second City called Infinite Sundays, which is musical improv. And what is it about musical improv that really plays to your strengths?
I love musical improv because it's such a challenge. Like the technical challenge of it really appeals to me. And because I have this musical theater training, I'm a trained classical singer. I've been doing musical theater for over two decades. So to me, it naturally fits with like the genres and the rhyming and the song structures and the heightened characters all just made me totally fall in love.
And what's the secret about rhyming? Because
I think knowing some of the rules before you come in so that you can play with those rules and break them, like in any improv style that you choose, right? So for rhyming, for example, if I start a song and I know that that song is going to be like an A-B-A-B song, that means that I'm going to have...
we got to back up.
Yep.
Tell people what A-B-A-B song is.
A-B means that your first and your third line, the A and A, are going to rhyme. And the second and fourth line, the B and B, are going to rhyme. So A-B-A-B just means that the last word in those lines, what they're going to rhyme with.
So can you give us an example?
Yeah. So an example, I'm trying to think of a real song to give you an example. I'll just make one up. So it'd be like I'm going to walk my cat, and you might think it should be a dog, but I say this is where it's at. The cat is my favorite smog. Right? So those were not real good rhymes or real words even.
And you were rhyming dog and smog.
Yep.
And cat and at.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. And that's the stellar improv that I can do.
And you had a game about rhyming.
There are a few that I really enjoy. One of them is like a rap battle where...
That scares me, just hearing
I know, right? I know. Where you choose... you can choose a word or you can choose a theme. So you can either choose a word that you're going to continue rhyming with.
Let's keep it really simple.
Great. So do you want to stick with cat?
Yeah, sure. That's, okay. You can't get any simpler than cat.
Right, exactly.
Which is simpler, dog or cat, do you think?
I think A-T is good.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of at words.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's find out.
Okay. All
right. So we can play this where basically we just do it like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So that's like the rhythm that I've played it with where we can be like... so we have a cat, right? We're going to start with the word cat. So we'll be like... Did you see that really cute cat? Ba-dup, 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 bup.
It was wearing a top hat.
Ba-dup, 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 dup. I said, whoa, what's up with that? Da-dup, ba-dup, 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 bump.
I said, get off my mat.
Da-dup, ba-dup, 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 bump. Exactly. Oh, should we keep going?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. Wow, that little kitty's fat. Ba-dup, 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 bump.
Hey, why don't you just give her a little pit-pat?
Ba-dup, yeah, that I'm out because I couldn't think of another rhyme.
And oh, so it's an elimination?
It's elimination.
Okay.
Yeah. So the goal is also to stay on the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how competitive everyone's being, if you go off the rhythm, everyone could be like, whoa.
And what was the other rhyming game that you liked?
Another rhyming game that this one's actually not rhyming, but it is musical theater.
Okay.
Or musical improv.
Because musical improv still intimidates me.
So this one is kind of a combination, actually, of like the five things idea and the rhythm. Just
okay.
Keeping a rhythm. So it's called Green Beans.
Okay.
You heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It's really simple. It's so simple and I love it. Where it's another, so you don't have to even sing. It's just that rhythm.
I love that already.
Right?
I'm buying into that game already.
See, music improv is for everyone.
Right.
So
do you really believe that?
I do. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
Why do you think it is for everyone?
I've met so many musical improvisers who are not musically trained.
Mm-hmm.
Like who, I mean, in Infinite Sundays, Jeff Dow, who's a friend of mine and an excellent improviser, and I don't think he'd call himself a singer,
mm-hmm.
but he was in Infinite Sundays because he was great.
So for those people that are listening, like, I'm not really a good singer, what would you tell them?
I think if you have the sense of rhythm, the sense of structure, the sense of play and listening that you'd have in regular improv, and then be willing to kind of go the extra mile to be incensed to sing. That's what music is all about, right? Is that we can't speak anymore. We just have to sing because we're so passionate about what's happening.
Like in a musical, it's like, oh, this is the time where the emotion keeps building in your body and I can't express the emotion. I'm going to do it through song.
Exactly.
How important, even if you don't have a good voice, is commitment to this?
It is vitally important. You have to be committed because if you're not, I think that shows on stage right away, right? I think everybody can tell if you're not committed to what you're doing. And it becomes a lot harder to make something really move forward. So I think that even if you're failing, oh my gosh, like I have bombed songs, absolutely. But if you just commit to it and fail big, oh, it's going to be so much fun.
Give me an example of when you failed big. You know, you bombed and you're like, you know what? I am just going to, I got to make this even worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were definitely times where we, like in Infinite Sundays, we would know that a song was not working. And
structurally or?
Oh, yeah. Like no one was really coming up with anything good or like no one would. Because, again, the commitment where you got to be able to like jump up and do your verse and do a whole four lines or whatever it is. And like, you could tell like no one really wanted to, no one felt compelled, no one had something. And so what we would do is just like sing that chorus again and just add some harmonies and make it big. And everyone knew that we probably should have already ended the song, but we're going to do it one more time all together and just go even bigger with it and makes it real silly and fun.
Sometimes I think in improv, when stuff like that happens, especially let's say that's the opening number of a musical improv show, that can be a great thing. how does that free you up when you bomb from the beginning?
Mm. Yeah, what a nice way to think about that, because that's very kind to yourself, right?
Which is not normally what I do, on stage or off, but...
Well, that's our way, isn't mm-hmm. it, as comedians?
Are you hard on yourself?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I'm trying to think if I've met any artist who's, like, real kind to themselves.
Like, how are you hard on yourself? Is it after a show, after filming an episode of Science with Sophie? You'll be like, oh, I had it in my head, it would go a different way.
Mm-hmm. It's all the time. It is all of those things, and then more. I mean, I'm a perfectionist.
Welcome to the club.
Exactly, right? Like, yeah, it's part of what makes us good at our craft, I think. And so there are parts of me that, when I have this internal argument, I'm like, well, my desire for perfection is what makes really high quality work.
But tell the people too how that also gets in your way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to think perfectionism was an asset.
Right, right. And it really, it can be stifling, because what I'm learning to do is to take a step back and realize what I've created is cool. And if it's not perfect, that's okay, because that's not what science is. That's not what comedy is. That's not what art is. And that the only person who has that expectation is me.
So getting back to this game that we kind of did a segue here, and it was fun. And that wasn't perfect, was it?
Hey.
The rhythm. You were going to rhythm and the five things you were going to combine, and you had a game.
Yeah, it's called Green Beans.
Okay.
And all it is
you're smiling and laughing. It must be so silly.
It's really goofy. This is something I learned at Mint, which is Music Improv Night, at MCL, which doesn't exist anymore, but the community has really continued in music improv.
Which is Mint was, for people who don't know,
it was a weekly music improv show in Chicago. It's still going on. I think it's at the Annoyance on Tuesday nights or something.
And MCL was a dedicated space mm-hmm. to music improv.
It was, yeah, and it really built a whole community, and that community still persists, which is awesome. So green beans.
You're going to serve us some green beans right now.
It's so simple. All it is you go. The group says together, I like green beans, what do you like? I like green beans, what do you like? And then you just say, I like A, I like B, I like C, I like D. And in between all of those things, we just like support you. So it might sound like this. I like green beans, what do you like?
I like green beans, what do you like?
I like dogs, I like beer, I like lamps, I like ass. I like green beans, what do you like?
I like green beans, what do you like? I like ham.
Yeah.
I like bones.
Yeah.
I like Coke.
Yeah.
I like tissue paper.
Yeah.
I like green beans. What do you like?
I like green beans. What do you like?
And we just do that in a circle?
Yep. And that's it. And it's really about just having those four things happen really fast in the rhythm. They could rhyme. They don't have to.
And that just... What's the benefit of that?
The benefit of that is really similar to five things, where you're just going with the flow and letting your mind just pop up with whatever happens. You're not judging it. You're just letting it come out of your mouth. So like, hey, I do a children's science comedy show. Probably shouldn't have said ass just then, but I did. And that's fine, because that's improv. And that's the beauty of it, is just it's letting your mind go.
So where is the connection between science and improv, art and science? Where do they intersect?
So many places. The reason I was drawn to both in college is because I really think they're both looking at the same ultimate questions of human condition. Why are we here? What makes us human? Why do we do what we do? And so neuroscience looks at that from the brain perspective and behavior. And then theater is looking at kind of similar things, behavior and patterns and history. So those I found to be really complementary all the time. And the balance, too, is nice, of like the concrete nature of science and evidence and the really not concrete side of art and the subjectivity of art. So I love the combination. And then in improv and comedy specifically, comedy, laughter, it is such a useful tool for learning. It lets us calm down, we relax, there are chemicals that are released in our brains, chemicals that are suppressed in our brains when we laugh as well, that just lets our guard down, right? We don't have to fear, we know we're in a safe space. And so when you're in that area of your brain, you can learn. You are ready to absorb information.
I had one of my most influential teachers, Martin DeMott, who's long gone, but he was just an amazing teacher. He was a real disciple of Violo Spolin's work. And, you know, occasionally he would give us tips on teaching. And the one thing he said, especially with the warm-up games, is get people laughing. Get people laughing, and then you can go in to do more the harder stuff, the two-person scenes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Which also is similar to what you said about bombing at the beginning. If everyone's laughing, and even if it's like, oh, whoa, that didn't go the way I thought, if you can laugh about it, you're letting your own guard down.
Well, I think it also, too, helps with the perfectionism. Because, mm-hmm. like, okay, we all, I don't know how you feel, we all want to do the perfect show where we don't make any mistakes. Mm. But if we're doing it right at the top, we're like, either we're going to, you know, quit, you know, and leave the show, but which we can't, or we're just going to go, okay, well, I got to let go here. I'm not getting the perfect show. And now it gives me permission to do the best I can.
Mm, yeah, that permission, that self-permission, right?
Oh, mm. Such a hard one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. In life.
Yes. Well, it seems like you've given yourself plenty of permission with Science with Sophie. And improv and stuff like that. And we have to wrap this up. And we usually ask the same question at the end of the podcast. I'm kind of building it up a little for you. You know, give some suspense to the people that are listening. They've heard this question a million times, but I really want to drag it out. So as they're listening, they're like, oh, my God, he might ask something new. So let me ask you this, Sophie. What would you say to someone starting out in improv today?
It's making me almost a little bit emotional to answer this question because...
What's that emotion?
Because when you say today, that's what really makes me give pause because there's so much happening right now that... I alternate between feeling like I have to get out there and make a difference in the world and between going, oh my God, we're all gonna die. Like, how can one person make a difference today? So my advice, if you are getting started today, is be patient, enjoy every moment of it, because you might as well have fun while you're trying to do something that's totally crazy and fun and out there and weird and make your footprint in the world.
How about the person that's doing it? They've been around for a couple classes maybe, and they're not having fun at it. Or they've been doing it for a couple years and now they're not having fun at it. What advice would you give that person? How do you make it fun for yourself? Especially when your friends may be getting stuff that you want and that you feel like you're being passed over.
Mm-hmm. And I know that feeling. We've all had that feeling. If you ever meet one person in improv who has not had that feeling, give them my email.
Right. I don't think they were in improv for very long.
Right.
They might have took literally one class or a workshop somewhere.
Right. They were one hit wonder and they're like,
How do you get over that?
You know, it's... something that I've thought about recently, especially as a woman in any arena, that there's so much competition and there's a lot of feeling of one person's success is another person's lack, right? And instead, your success is my success. Because
how is that? Will you explain that to me? Because if someone gets success and I don't get success, I look at it as a punishment. Mm-hmm. And I ask myself, what am I doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
How do we share each other's success?
If we are all really supporting each other in the way that improv professes we do, mm-hmm. then it means that we are supporting each other no matter what, right? We are friends. We are in this together. So if you succeed, well, then maybe there's something you'll think of me for. If I'm not ready for that, then maybe I can come to you for advice and ask you what you think. I think there's just no harm in learning from each other and being supportive and being happy for one another, not only is it going to make your day a little bit easier and be kinder to yourself, which affects your own brain chemistry and your own patterns of thought and how you see yourself, but it's also celebrating your friends for the accomplishments that they've had. I mean, everyone's working really hard at this.
So how do you tell the person who's not having fun at it to have fun at it? If they're in that rut.
Just have some fun. Having been in that rut, I found it really helpful to take a step back for a second.
And what does that look like?
Well, reassessing my goals. Because like I said, I wanted to do main stage. And then I realized I have a different goal. And that's okay. It's not a failure. That was something I really thought about. Like, am I actually just not wanting to do this because I think I'm failing at it and I'm choosing something else that I think I'd be better at? Well, there's validity in that too. But I really found the thing that I am willing to work so hard for and really struggle through and like cry about and sweat for. And that's the thing I want to spend all my time doing.
So it got to a point where it's like, you know what? I'm not emotionally invested in the main stage as much as I am with Science with Sophie, creating my own project.
Yeah, like really when I thought about what's the next 5 years going to look like and what is the next 10 years for me, like what gave me little butterflies in my stomach is thinking about Science with Sophie.
So how'd you let go of the main stage dream?
It actually was pretty organic because I just started working on my own project and that ended up really taking up a lot of time and like evolving into what it is now. So I didn't even intend to like stop auditioning. It just kind of happened. But what I've noticed is since finding the thing that really is where I live, like where I creatively love to be, that has actually attracted more attention. I get asked to do more shows. I get invited to do more things.
So what's the lesson to the people that are listening about creating your own thing and not, because we improv, you're right, it's very supportive and stuff like that. But what I found too in improv is we can get caught up in, well, that's their dream and I'm going to follow their dream because everybody wants to get hired at Second City or everybody wants to do a boat or everyone wants to do UCB or everybody wants to get on a Herald team at IO. What is it about creating your own project that gives you power, that gives you those opportunities? How important is that?
For me, it's vitally important because I get to decide exactly how I want to impact the world. And that footprint that I'm leaving, I get to decide what that footprint looks like. And I don't know that that's right for everyone. I don't want to say that that has to be what everybody does. But I just find it so fulfilling to be able to learn and craft something myself. Maybe kind of like when I was painting shoes and making shelves, is that I have the ability to craft it myself and learn along the way and evolve and create it and see where it can go, knowing that it's something I've done.
So I'm going to ask you a science question. What do you think, scientific, if you could come up with a hypothesis theory, by creating your own projects, Sophie got more opportunities to perform. So what do you think scientifically, if you had to research this, and we were doing a study on this, what you would find as a finding?
In terms of the effect on the person?
In terms of you create something and you get all these opportunities. Versus the person that is just going, I'm not getting opportunities, I'm going to take another class or I'm going to audition for another show somewhere else. What do you think scientifically is happening when someone creates their own projects and now all of a sudden they're getting more opportunities versus if they just played by the rules in an institution, I'll just audition for another Herald team, I'll just audition again for Second City. What do you think scientifically happens to that person that creates their own projects?
Oh, good question. I want to research. Let's get to a university and start a partnership. I think my hypothesis is that it's twofold. I think it's experiential, that there's a lot of evidence out there that one of my favorite educational phrases is a Chinese proverb that says, tell me and I will forget. Now I'm forgetting it because I wasn't shown it. It says, tell me and I will forget. Show me and I will remember. Involve me and I will understand. So I think if you are creating something yourself, there's an element that you're doing it, you're learning it as you go, and you're making mistakes and learning, so you're really understanding it in a deeper level. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I think there's also a confidence and a craft ability where you are feeling powerful because you're making something yourself, and that power and that confidence is contagious.
Is it an energy that you're putting out to the universe?
I think so. Yeah, which is hard to scientifically quantify, but I think it's out there.
All right. Well, I think we've done enough experiments here. Thank you, Sophie Schrand, for being our guest on this episode of Improv Nerd.
Thank you so much for having me, Jimmy.
Another great episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. I want to thank our guest today, Sophie Schrand. For more information about Science with Sophie, go to sciencewithsophie.com. That's sciencewithsophie.com. You can also see the first season of Science with Sophie on YouTube. I'd like to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. And for more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv classes, workshops, and intensives called The Art of Slow Comedy, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. Also, follow us on Twitter at improv_nerd. Like our Improv Nerd fan page, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is Improv Nerd Podcast, all one word. And thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.